All right, here we are on another Charles and Zarina show, Monday night,
There you
performing notes
go.
call. See, I got it right? I'm
You
here with
did.
Charles
Good
and
evening.
Matt. Yeah, there we go.
Hello,
So they
everybody.
wanted me to start. You're on a
Yeah, Eddie's
telephone,
lost.
so you have no
Eddie
webcam.
lost his show. Yeah, I don't have the
Hey.
webcam. I can see you.
Yeah.
I have
I'm just
you
gonna
hooked
take
up on
over
the
that
computer.
song. I'm gonna take over his show
Matt, how are
music.
you?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. How's everybody else on the call doing?
Doing good.
Doing good. Doing good. All right, so I guess let's get started, Matt.
Alrighty. Well, first up, we are going to bring in Derek. So, let's make sure Derek has made it on the call. All right. Yep, I see him there.
There he
Derek,
is.
you're unmuted and good to go if you're ready. Derek?
Can you hear me?
There he is.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Good. How are y'all doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Doing good. How are you?
Good. A little under the weather, but I won't talk much. I'll just be coughing, so you might want to mute me after I'm done.
All right, what do you got here, Dick? Eric?
Well, I was looking at an asset
Let's see.
on the Excel spreadsheet. My first question now is, the Excel spreadsheet actually has an address of 75 Terrace Avenue in Columbus, Ohio. It's in the self-performing. And then when I went due diligence, it's actually address 1117 Lindy in Cincinnati. So I was wondering which one it actually is. Because it does make a
We need to
difference.
check.
Downloaded that, by the way.
Do what, Matt?
Well, I was checking to make sure that that wasn't the original spreadsheet that he downloaded, if it wasn't the most recent spreadsheet that was on the member site.
Yeah, I just pulled up the one on the member site, and it still has Terrace Avenue. So I was just wondering which one, because the one in Terrace is kind of in a rough neighborhood.
Well, we definitely need to confirm that, Matt. Just look at check out the number, the loan number. Is that a peak number?
No, it's an AMX number.
Okay.
Yep.
Can you just look at that and see what the address is on that one? Or do you have AMX open?
I pulled it up and I pulled up the pay history. It says loan 41693. So,
And what's the address? What's the address show on it, Serena?
it doesn't have an address on the pay history.
Okay.
It's in the
Yeah, you have to.
correct folder though, Terrace Avenue.
Okay. Yeah, they may have got. I just want to make sure they upload the right due diligence documents on that when they upload those files.
Because
Let's go ahead and.
if you go to the contract for deed, it has 1117 Lindy.
Okay. And so the pay history is Lindy also. So the due diligence
Yes.
files documents have a different address. So we will need to confirm that for you, Derek, first to make sure. But let's go to your question. We'll confirm that address. And so it says it's a sub-performing. You reviewed the due diligence file, and it looks like the mortgage payments have been paid, just not on time. I didn't see
Right.
the taxes are delinquent. Okay. So can this note be sold as performing? So typically when we put something on a tape as a sub-performing, it's because the borrower could be a rolling 30. They may have fallen behind, and we did a deferment or some type of repayment plan with that borrower. So they have a slow pay history.
Okay, I did see
So
that.
it's priced as a sub-performing versus a performing. It's priced a little differently just because it does have a slow pay history. So sometimes borrowers they will hit a bump in the road, and a lot of these borrowers are just rolling 30s, and they roll for a year or more, 30 days delinquent. So when we look at that, that's kind of how we quest that's kind of how we sort these when we're going performing or sub-performing. I mean, a performing one, they pay within 30 days every month. You know, they're consistent on their payments. And they may have had one glitch, but a sub-performer would be somebody that would have multiple glitches in their pay history.
Okay, because I did look it up, and it looks like they've looked it over this weekend. It looks like they've missed like about 5 payments. So I could see why it's sub-performing.
Right. So that's why. And let's see. I mean, it's a, you know, you asked the question about could it be brokered as a, I guess, as a full or a partial. And sometimes sub-performing, just depending on the pay history, you may or may not want to try to broker it as a partial.
Right, you know, I was thinking that.
Because there is a history of late payments there. And not that we think they're going to default, but they're going to be slow paying. And so they've given you the impression that they are going to be slow paying. And so, you know, a lot of these borrowers are just slow payers and will be slow payers till the end of time. you know, we try to work with them, but you can only work with them so much to keep them current.
Okay. So if I was to, if I was to get this asset, then I would have to season it a little bit more to get them back on track, possibly to sell it as a performing.
Right.
Because I was actually looking at it to sell the full note, not a partial.
Right. Well, I might say you could sell it as a full, or you could buy the asset, and you could season it, and you know, get them back, you know, to where they're on track and where they're paying consistently. And again, that depends on the borrower, and you can tell a lot of that by the pay history. If you look at that pay history, you can see, you know, had they just never been current, and they just need to get current, and then you know, you could do a deferment. So if they're 1 month behind. A lot of times what we do is, you know, they may have a loss of a job. So they get 1 month or 2 months behind. And then we'll do a deferment, basically roll those payments to the end of their note, bring them current, and that borrower stay current then because, you know, their circumstances have changed. They've got jobs, and, you know, now they're paying on time. So that's something common that we've done is we've done deferments, and we have a lot of the borrowers that stay current after that.
Okay.
Matt, do you actually have this pay history pulled up?
I wanted to double check something real quick. So just to make sure to kind of reiterate what I was asking, because I did just pull up the one I was talking about. So there is a new updated Excel spreadsheet tape, correct, on the member site. And so if you download that one, it does have the correct information in it. So I'll go ahead and pull that up real quick.
I've got it up in case you
Okay. I got it.
It is Terrace Avenue. Is the correct address, right, Matt? Okay.
Correct. And so I'm pulling up the pay history right now. From that Dropbox. Oh, and of course it's. Yeah. Got to download it.
I always download it because I can't do anything in Dropbox. Like
yeah, that. I know. Excuse me. I'm with you there with the coughing and whatnot.
It's not winter time.
Well, just glad these germs don't travel by phone.
I'm telling you.
Well, let me ask you this though: is the one that was in the due diligence file still available, or the one at 1117 Lindy, or was that just put in there by accident?
Matt,
or something?
Is there 1117 Lindy on that spreadsheet on the Excel spreadsheet on the member site?
I'll tell you. I actually think that one has.
No, that one's gone.
That it's gone. Okay. So 1175 is no longer available. Yes.
Okay.
And I do have me.
I'm just going to switch it to me, Matt, since I already have it up. Just help you out just for a second. I know. Anyway, here's the pay history on Terrace, the one that we're talking about in question. And then I don't even need to scroll all the way down. You could just, I hide all that other crap, so all those other things are hidden. You see here where it says regular payment, due date was October and September. They made a double payment in December on the 2nd and the 31st. So they were, as of this payment, 3 months behind, and they caught themselves up to 2 months. But then you have this line here that talks about a loan deferment. And so we don't see any more pay history after that. So that's why this one, it would be a sub-performing loan.
Okay, I see that now, because the spreadsheet I'd have was for Lindy. So
it was for the other one, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Okay.
When I open up these pay histories, because they got so many internal codes and all that stuff, I just hide most of the other columns and stuff like that, and I just keep principal and interest, due date, and pay date. That's really all you guys need to be doing. And then just look for where it says regular payments, and then kind of go from there. So, yeah, this one's on a loan deferment. So I don't even know. Let's see. Did they pay something? Yeah, they did. No, they haven't paid anything yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they haven't even started paying yet on this one.
So it shows the next due on this one is January of 16. Now, there was a loan deferment, so I'm wondering if the whole pay history was downloaded, because typically that loan deferment would have brought them due for January.
Exactly.
And but they hadn't made a payment since the loan deferment was done, so I definitely want to look at that one. So this, the pay history you may have been looking at too, may have been Lindy's pay history.
Yeah, that's what Linda, I was.
Zarina, will you throw that back over?
Yeah. I think as well that this payment history is just from January, because that's what it said at the top. Yeah. Matt, you got it again?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
So this could really be considered a non-performing then.
I'm actually going to download and show the most current up-to-date pay.
That's what I was thinking. The pay history that I had, Charles, the date on the top of it said January, so that's why we didn't have anything updated.
There we go. All right.
There we go.
Okay.
let's switch everything, because they did it the opposite there, so.
You got it, like, super tiny, Matt, too. You know Charles can't see.
Oh, yeah.
I got my bifocals on. Thank you.
There we go.
There we go. See?
So they're due for April.
Okay.
So this one, yeah. So they don't have – there was – there's the adjustment there. And so then they have made payments. And so they're actually due for
May.
April 1.
Are they due for April 1?
Yeah. So the last one with the adjustment on 3/28, which would have been that was their March payment, and then they adjusted it for 1 month, so they were actually due for April 1.
Yeah. Looks like
so
they made
the first column. Column C is your actual due date, so that's the next payment due on the loan.
And it looks like on number 164, they paid like on the 28th. Matt, you go messing around with stuff. You see that?
I know. I've got some gremlins in this computer, I promise you.
I'm telling you. It said on that one, it said that they paid on 3. Oh, matter of fact, did you just switch it around?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Matt messed it up, so we'll just blame Matt. I can't read it now. Anyway, it looked like they paid March 28th, and that was applied to the March one, and then they paid on the 21st of April, which was there we go, 28th of March. So they're slow paying, like Charles was mentioning.
So what's the 421 regular payment for 41?
That's where it was 168? Applied to.
Okay. So they didn't pay for April.
Adjustments. So yeah, They're late payers at this point. They're paying right. 28th, 21st. So that's what you got on this one, besides the whole deferment situation. So this one, I don't know, Charles, you could sell this one as a performing loan if you saw some more sentiment on it. It's just late.
Yeah, you could.
How much more?
Well, I mean, it just depends on a lot of it. I mean, it's going to depend on the asset itself, too, some of the dynamics of the note itself. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's got a decent pay history, I mean, you can trade this for, you know, a performing note. And again, it depends on, you know, you have to look at the BPOs and the dynamics of the note itself.
Mm-hmm. Like what I would do, I'd probably go back and see how long they were, you know, rolling 30 or rolling 60 or whatever. And then take half that amount of time in seasoning. So if they were rolling 30 for 6 months, I'd want to see three more months of on-time payments to see if they can be sold as a performing loan. So as of right now, they're paying late, which is better than being, you know, behind, but they're still paying late. So it's not looking like, oh, this is a solid performing loan. It just, you know, they got the deferment, they're paying, but it's not on time.
Right. Okay.
And yeah, and they've made five. I mean, they've paid 5 months payments on this. So, I mean, the loan deferment was back in December. So it's, you know, they've been making their payments ever since. So it hadn't been deferred since December. So typically, we won't do a lot of deferments. We may offer them one deferment in a year's time, or, you know, just depending on the borrower. But we don't do deferments regularly, I mean, like every 3 months or anything like that, just because, you know, you don't want to get a borrower in the habit of, here, I'll make a payment, then you defer two. Now I get 3 months behind again, and you make a payment and defer two. We won't do that. So
man,
we try to work with the borrowers. But this borrower, it looks like he's gotten back on a payment track.
Mm-hmm.
So if I season this for a little bit, or if it gets seasoned a little bit longer, that this is the one that's actually in a bad area. But if it's a performing note, then that really doesn't matter, right?
Right. I mean, you're not. Yeah, because, I mean, these people, you know, the collateral that they're paying on the house, and, you know, I'm not sure how many years they've been in the house or how many payments they've made, but I'd have to look at the whole loan history. But, you know, it's a performing note. So, you know, they've got equity, or they've got an interest in keeping that home. They're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
At least we hope not.
Well, if they got a deferment, that shows that they want to stay there. So.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that power quota might be off now because it might be the other place.
Maybe.
Might be Lindy, but.
No, you still got the right numbers.
Yeah, you still got the right numbers.
Yeah, you just had the wrong pay history. But you need to adjust, Matt, if you want to adjust the on that investor price, it's not 360 months, it should be 225. You see that? 225. There we go. So, something like this, you could, you know, I don't know about a partial. Partial might be, I might want to see some more seasonings on something like a partial, but you can flip this whole thing. What were you thinking?
That's what I was looking at.
Doing a partial?
No, flipping the whole thing.
Oh, flipping the whole thing. So, Matt, put in 225 on the partial down below. And then, let's see. Let's just plug in some numbers for a price. Plug in a number, man. Put in, there you go. Oh, keep going up.
Yeah, I had like 31 or 30.
Did you?
It was at 8. Yeah, there we go.
Okay, there you go. So 31,000. No, wrong way, Matt. What's 32 look like? Well, there we go. So you could sell it for 32.5. and just sell off the whole thing. And I don't know, let me whip out my calculator. What's the difference? Let's see, 32.5 minus 25.501. About $7,000 to flip this deal if you sold it for that.
Okay.
So I would probably tell my investor, look, you know, this guy's got a deferment. He's paid on time, or he's paid every month, not on time, but he's paid every month since his deferment. So we have him, you know, on his April payment. He paid and he's still at April or whatever. Just kind of give them the story behind the deal, because they're really just like,
that deferment was in January, right?
December.
December. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So they've got 6 months of payments on this deal. So really all you have to do is just kind of explain it to your investor, say, look, this is why I'm giving you 8.5% on this, you know, blah, 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 and just sell it.
Okay.
But, yeah, you can make a pretty good profit off something like that.
Okay, that's what I wanted to hear.
Cool. All right, are we done?
Yeah, I think the
Any
other question was.
Derek, let us know.
Yeah, I wanted to see if I had put in the stuff for the power quota correctly.
No, you have to go back and rewind. What I made Matt adjust was the number of payments. You have to adjust that to the payments remaining. But everything else was correct, so you're pretty close.
And Derek, if you'll go back online to the tape that's right now on the member site for the performing loan or titanium and download it, it'll be the most current, which will have all the corrected links in it.
Okay, appreciate it.
Charles, let me ask you a question. So.
All right.
This is a question that comes up quite frequently, and we do have it in the archives quite a bit. But just to touch on it real quick, is how if they're purchasing a land contract that's not recorded, how would Wallace secure their position when they need to foreclose on the property?
You'd probably record the land contract. You'd probably have to record the land contract if you had to foreclose on the property. Now then, you're just talking about it, they buy a land contract outright, and then they have to go through a foreclosure process. Okay, first of all, they want to make sure they have to go through a foreclosure process and they can't just terminate it. So don't automatically assume that you have to go through foreclosure. I mean, in many states, all you have to do is you have to just go in and file for a termination of the land contract. If the property is vacated, it's actually more of an eviction process, and it's actually a faster turnaround. I just did a termination on land contract. It was basically eviction because the people had already vacated the property. So because they vacated the property, the attorney said, no, all we have to do is just file an eviction notice, and then you take possession, and that's what we did. So,
okay.
So the attorney, if it's in a state that you have to go through a judicial or like a non-judicial foreclosure process, and the attorney says you have to go through that process, then you will have to record that land contract, or the attorney will probably want to record that land contract. But just make sure the attorney is clear that. And make sure your servicers are clear as well. This is a land contract, and that you want to complete a termination and not a foreclosure. I did have a servicer that referred about 10 of my assets to an attorney to start foreclosure, and they started requesting documents, and I asked the servicer, why would they not request a termination? And the guy who was doing their foreclosures didn't know what a termination was. So just got to make sure, again, that when you're talking to the servicer, you make sure that servicer understands, I want to terminate. I don't want to foreclose if I don't have to.
Okay. And here's a follow-up question from Wallace. He said in his particular case, he just brokered a performing note, and his investors got the allonge, and they've got the assignment, so no signature was needed. Mm-hmm. So he's asking, how does he record? So I think he's getting kind of
Okay,
confused
so
on
if the
what you
land
report.
contract, so if the land contract is not recorded, then you do not record the assignment. You never record in the lodge, anyways. You would only record the deed, the special warranty deed to your company, if it's a land contract. If it's a note and mortgage, then the mortgage is going to be recorded. So, and you would get an assignment of mortgage at that point. And because the mortgage is recorded, you would record your assignment of mortgage.
There you go. So deed and assignment of mortgage, not the allonge.
Right.
And then just one more question from Deborah. She's asking if you know off the top of your head if Georgia does a termination or a foreclosure for land contracts.
You can terminate in Georgia.
Oh, cool. All right, Matt, next person.
I know all too well you can terminate in Georgia.
Do you?
That's right. Matt just bought an asset in Georgia, so Matt knows you can.
Yeah, I terminated it, so it was all good. So.
Excuse me.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and bring Mark in. Mark, you are unmuted if you're good to go. Go ahead.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Hey, Mark.
I've got kind of a follow-up question to that about insurance, because I've bought – with Deborah and I, she's probably online if you want to unmute her too, Matt. We bought several notes that are all unrecorded land contracts, and we haven't, we've got one or two that our company is on the deed as owner.
Okay.
And I'm just slightly concerned that since our company is listed as the owner of record on the property, if something happened, I might have some sort of exposure, liability exposure.
Well, are they insured, Mark?
We don't know yet because the transfer servicing hasn't been transferred, so we haven't been able to contact them yet.
Okay, so if the loan hasn't transferred and it was under a forced place policy, that forced place policy is in existence until the transfer is completed. Okay? And then once the servicing transfers, you'll want your servicer to either force place insurance and notify the borrower just to confirm that there's insurance on the property.
Okay.
So, Charles, can I ask a question real quick? Is a loss payee on a insurance policy the same as insurance for, let's say, an accident, slip and fall? I mean, does it cover the same issues?
No, it just depends if you take out liability, if there's a liability coverage. So when you get a forced place policy, you'll get the forced place, which is like fire and windstorm or hail. But then they'll ask you also, do you want to take out liability? And the liability is what would cover the slip and fall.
So I don't believe that any of ours have forced placed. They're all performing loans, Charles, that have – we're assuming that they have insurance, but we do not believe that they would probably include liability insurance.
They may not. Yeah, I mean, that's up to you. They may not, because if you include liability, it is a little bit more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
On the forced place. And, you know, I mean, I've got, it's an REO, but it's just a personal one of mine that was an REO. And I took out forced place, but I didn't take out liability insurance. That was just my preference. And, so if you want to cover a slip and fall or an accident or something like that, then you want to make sure you take out the liability when you get the forced place insurance.
Are
and
these performing
that.
Loans that you own, Deborah?
Yes.
That they bought, yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
so these are your own personal things. Charles, what would be, I mean, because you would normally
Deborah,
get like a
you,
slip and fall on a rental property because you're actually responsible for the property. That doesn't seem necessary with being a note owner because you're just the lender. So would somebody go after the lender because somebody else slipped and fall on your borrower's property?
I've never had it happen, Zarina. On an unrecorded land contract, you show as record owner. So keep
right.
that in mind because it is an unrecorded land contract. So you are the record owner. You're the lien holder, but you have a collateral interest in that property, but you're actually technically the owner until that deed is recorded, that land contract is recorded.
Gotcha. So we're talking about land contract.
But yeah, it's not. I mean, and I'd have to check our policies, and I can tell you the way you can look on a pay history when you're buying one of our notes. A lot of times on the pay histories, in most cases, if there's forced place insurance, you'll see insurance disbursements throughout the pay history. It'll notate insurance insurance INS. It'll abbreviate it. So you can see it. And it may only be $10 a month. It may be $5 a month. It may be $20 a month. But that's how you can tell if there's insurance on that asset. So when you're trying to determine if a property has insurance, that's one way to look at it. The other way is to look at the escrow to see if they are escrowing for the taxes and insurance.
Gotcha.
Is there a national vendor that we could look to for liability insurance that you know of? I've called my local company that I deal with, but they won't, because I'm buying properties all across the country, they won't.
We have, Mark, we have one on the member site, and I believe it's Ross Diversified, okay. RDS or RDI. So it should be on the member site. I think we have a couple of vendors on our member site. If you have questions or something, feel free to reach out to me. But there should be on the member site.
They are.
Ross okay. is. We did something with Ross on the first property we had because they did not escrow for insurance, but they did have it. So
yeah.
We did Ross.
Okay.
All right.
And that's who I've used. I've had real good Ross.
Okay. All right. And
but you can always get your servicer to use their provider too. A lot of these servicers will use a company called OSC, which are national companies. So there are a couple other companies servicers will use.
Right.
And the nice thing about your servicer doing it is if you take out a forced place and the servicer forced places the insurance, they're going to do an escrow analysis to collect that insurance.
Yeah, the type of insurance I'm looking for is, all right, one of our borrowers has a party, and something happens, and somebody gets hurt really bad, and they go after the homeowner, whose attorney then sees our company name on the deed, and assumes since we're the finance company, we have deeper pockets than where he got hurt, and they just list us as an additional sued.
You know, I understand that, and you can check with. I mean, again,
is that irrational?
If you use Roth, you can take out liability, and the servicers may have a liability on their coverage.
Okay.
So no, I see. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and so it'd be like Zarina having one of her wild parties, and somebody fall and break a hip.
Whatever. Whatever. You're not invited, just for that comment.
Oh, thank you. Does that answer your question, Mark?
Well, I'll give Ross a call tomorrow. We'll talk to him.
All right. Let me know if you have any questions. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Thanks, Deborah.
All right. Thanks, guys.
What else,
my wild parties.
Any questions?
My station wagon.
Exactly. There you go.
Doug was saying that he called Ross and he doesn't think that they have liability insurance.
I verify that because I just took out a policy about 3 months ago with Ross, and there was two different quotes. One was with liability and one was without liability. So they should have liability. So if they just double check, because I know they offer liability.
You know, Charles, wouldn't you say one of the great subjects that we're going to be talking about at the Summer Sentiment, which is the asset creation and protection class with Dykes Bodifer, would be a great instance of talking about this subject also as far as another level of protection, not just with insurance, but with the creation of the entity.
Right.
Shameless plug.
Matt, who do you have your properties insured through?
Ross.
Oh, nice.
You have it through Ross too, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I did have one with another company and decided that it wasn't best, and then actually went with Ross for an REO and then also so get them with Ross. So, and they did offer me this thing, a liability as well as just a straight insurer. So.
Okay. Yeah, I thought they did. So just verify that. You could, because most companies do offer liability, it just costs more.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like...
Alrighty, Matt. So somebody just put up here, ZZ's parties are legendary. Did you write that, Zarina? Just saying.
No, of course not. No. Oh, I wrote that.
Okay.
What kind of party are you going to...
I'm just saying, when we have the appreciation events and stuff like that, want to hang out with me. That's all I'm saying.
What kind of party are you going to put together for that meetup you're going to have up there in Columbus?
Don't worry about it. This is top secret. Sworn to secrecy.
Well, Matt, you knew Matt and I were coming to your meetup, right?
That'd be awesome if y'all did, but...
Sure will. You know. So you better have your slip and fall insurance in place, Serena.
Oh yeah, for you especially. I'll have a geriatric ramp just for you coming straight up.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right, Matt, let's move on.
All right. So next up we've got Brian, so let me pull Brian in.
Rambo. You know, he was the cool kid in school with a name like that.
Brian, you have yourself muted. If you can unmute yourself, you'll be good to go. There you go.
Hello?
There he is.
Hear me?
Hey, Brian.
Hey, how are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good. So the reason I'm asking is I just got an accepted offer. So I'm brokering a note to Colonial, and they accepted my offer. And I was just kind of wondering, he sent over all the collateral files for them to do the due diligence. I was kind of wondering, what should I do right now? I know Bob said to get him to sign something that basically says we agree upon the price. I was wondering, is that just a purchase or sale then?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can have him sign a purchase sell agreement. You can have him sign a letter of intent. I mean, at some point, I mean, to move faster, you could go ahead and get the letter of intent and follow it up with the purchase sell agreement. You know, typically we'll do a letter of intent. We don't usually execute our purchase sell agreements till the end, but we always get a letter of intent saying, okay, this is agreed upon pricing and you've accepted it and both parties will sign it. And then what we do is we start the due diligence. We order our tax and title and BPO. Yeah. And so that, you know, depending on how long that takes, it shouldn't take several days to get that in, but we'll get it. Once we get that in, then we'll pretty much proceed at that point. We'll have a contract drawn up and everything.
Okay. All right. And so.
I can barely hear you. I don't know what you just did.
Still live there. Can't hardly hear you. There we go. There we go.
Yeah, I'm on my iPad. I lost my headphones.
So he's talking like this.
But no, exactly. okay, that makes sense. I was just, like I said, this is my first one, so I was kind of just figuring out what was going on, what the process would be like.
Yeah, you get the letter of intent signed, go ahead, Zarina.
Okay.
Anytime you're brokering, you know, a note to Colonial, it's pretty much on the borrower's end. You did most of the work having them send over collateral files to kind of verify. But on their end, they're going to have to eventually sign a purchase and sale contract. And preceding that is going to be a letter of intent. And then once Colonial's going through due diligence, you'd probably just call them to say, okay, you know, this is where we are in the process, just kind of keeping them abreast because you're not in control of when all those documents come back. But you want to just have all these touches with your seller just to kind of keep communication open. and then Colonial will be communicating with you, okay, we've got this done, okay, here's the next step. Colonial's really going to initiate most of this, and you're just kind of, you know, acting as the go-between between the two parties. So his next, I guess the answer to your seller would be, okay, right now we're going to, you know, write up a letter of intent, we'll get that over to you, and eventually you're going to sign a purchase and sale agreement when we come up with the final price and all this other stuff after due diligence.
And will my name be on any of that?
On the purchase and sale agreement?
Yeah, would it? I don't need to be on that, do I?
Mm-mm.
No, the seller's.
That's what I thought. Yeah,
the
exactly.
Seller's the one. Yeah, the seller's the one that's going to have to sign the letter
agreement.
Of intent.
Yeah.
And the agreement. Yes.
All right. Well, that was short and easy. Thank you.
Yeah. And make sure you tell Colonial what the accepted price was. You know, you don't want to sign them without taking out your commission. So.
Okay.
Gotcha. That was easy. Matt next. So I swear, sometimes Matt be sleeping or something on here.
Yeah, he disappears on us. Matt, did you go there and put a chicken pot pie on the oven?
Matt's in the background.
He's trying to tell you. So Matt's wife's been traveling for several days, so he has to cook for himself. So I'm sure it's been chicken pot pies in there.
It's been easy bake oven, pretty much.
Oh my gosh.
What else, Matt?
All right. So next up, we have a pool that was sent in by Andre. I know, Charles, you wanted to kind of just touch on a little bit on this pool. And Andre did reach back out to us and say that it's not quite ready to go to come to us on the call anyway, but I know you wanted to kind of touch on a little bit of this before we went into it anyway.
I do, and, you know, we're seeing more and more of the students sending pools of assets in to get a pricing on their brokering assets, and, I mean, we appreciate everybody sending the pools in because we're definitely always looking to buy assets. But we want you to keep in mind that make sure that when you're sending in a pool of assets, and Andre sent one in and it just wasn't quite ready, but, you know, make sure that there's a story with the pool. So don't send a spreadsheet that doesn't have, you know, we need next pay dates, last pay dates. Make sure the information on the spreadsheet is thorough. That's mm-hmm. everything we're going to need to price it. If they have values, have them put the values on there. If they don't, we're going to order values. So our pricing is always subject to due diligence once they accept an offer. But, you know, make sure that, you know, when you send in a spreadsheet, we want to know the story on the pool. Okay, is it an individual seller? Is it a company selling it? Who's selling it? You know, is it third-party service or is it being self-serviced? You know, so there's a lot of things, you know. Are you dealing directly with the source who owns these, or the person who owns these notes? What we try to eliminate is, that, you know, there's a lot of pools out there that what you'll hear us refer to as broker jokers. They have a pool and they send it to 100 different people to price it. Okay.
Yep.
So that kills the value of a pool right there. And so 9 times out of 10, if it's a pool that's been shopped, we'll know it because we've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we get a lot of pools in, you know, through our pricing desk, and, you know, so we see, sometimes we see pools 2-3 times, so we'll see those pools multiple times. So we want to know if the source is directly with, are they brokering it, or is there 4 brokers ahead of them, and they're just passing it down the line. So, you know, you want to deal, we want people dealing directly with the source, and but we want to know the story behind the pool. You know, is they're all performing, this is an individual seller, or it's a credit union selling them, you know, and they're serviced by XYZ servicing, or they're a third-party servicing company, you know, or if they're originated after January 10th of 2014, we want to make sure they're Dodd-Frank compliant. So these are questions you want to ask your sellers before you present it. So it's a lot easier for us to price, and we don't have to keep coming back and asking for more things, and we
mm-hmm.
can process a pool faster. So I mean, we appreciate Andre sending it in, and I know it wasn't ready to go, but it was a great case study. Not really a case study, but just in general, because we're seeing more and more people brokering notes. And like, again, we're all for looking at notes and pricing, and we just need to make sure we have all the information to price them from.
And while we're talking about pools and performing notes and all this other stuff, those of you guys who've gone through the rough draft of the pricing course, you'll notice that this really applies to Lesson 7. So, Andre, if you haven't checked that out, just go to Module 3 on Performing Loans and check out Lesson 7 specifically, and that'll kind of give you an idea of the things that you need to include on, you know, a spreadsheet to kind of give Colonial or whoever you're sending this to an idea of what that asset is. There's lots of columns on there that you can fill in to help, you know, bring the story around. But also we have executive summaries, examples that you guys can also utilize. And that's basically you're telling how'd you find this loan or, you know, what's this person doing? Are they some sort of investor? We need to know that kind of information. And again, like Charles was saying, you know, if this is originated after Dodd-Frank, we need a story on who, you know, who did the paperwork on this, because it can be a real problem. So those are the kinds of things that we need to know in order to give you a proper price instead of having this back and forth. And plus, you know, you guys are trying to present yourselves as a legitimate business. The fact that we have to go back and forth with you to get information is not good. So you want to have as best presentation of this, you know, offering this pool as possible. So having a lot of information on that spreadsheet and having some sort of executive summary to talk about the story is really what you need to have before you even come and present it to us. And you'll get a lot of that in Lesson 7. That's my shameless plug. How about that?
Thank you, Zarina.
Just saying.
All right, Matt, what else?
All right, so Jason is asking, is there any cases that you've seen, Charles, where Colonial bought land contracts which are originated.
Originated, Matt. That's that Mississippi twang, everybody.
I'm telling you. You remember originated. Originated.
Originated. Yeah.
Orange.
So, you have put Eddie to shame.
I'm telling you.
You have put Eddie to shame, Matt.
Well, he is from the Jackson area, and I'm from deep south Mississippi, so of course mine's going to be a little.
Oh. Excuse me.
All right. So let's go back to your question. Are there any cases under which Colonial buy land contracts which were originated by a dealer? We have. I mean, we see different. I'm not going to say we have a lot, but yeah, we have seen some land contracts that are originated by dealers.
Hopefully that answers that. I wonder what the premise behind that question is. Maybe you have something originated? You should send it in. Fred's asking, can we talk about title insurance, lender policies, and old liens? Maybe we should unmute Fred.
Fred,
open mic.
You can.
Watch it, guys. That's a slippery slope.
Hey, Fred.
They always are, Fred. How are you?
I'm good. How are you tonight, Charles?
Good, Fred. I'm good. Thank you.
We're looking at a note on the May tape. Most of it looks, you know, sterling silver, but there's an old deed recorded against the property that was probably paid off, but there's not a release of.
Okay. Now, Fred, the title search that you're using, was that our title search?
Yeah, it was in the due diligence file.
Okay, so you may want to order an updated title search. Okay, so I know exactly which one you're talking about because I was looking into your email today. I actually had it on my desk because there was a title policy that was issued. Okay, so
yeah,
the title policy that was issued did not reflect that lien. If that lien was to be a valid lien, I don't think it is. And But if it was a valid lien, you have a title claim there against that.
Okay.
Because the original title policy did not indicate there were any liens on that property. And that's what they sent to us, and that's what we buy it, because we know there's a policy that we can go back and you could go back and file a claim on. If that,
okay.
And honestly, that did not come up when we had presented that, or when we had pushed back to our seller. Seller had come back and said, no, there's a title policy. We have a title policy. Now then, the reason I say you may want to order an updated search, you could order an updated search if you wanted to see if they pick that lien up again. Sometimes we've used, now Pro Title is who we mainly use now, Fred. And some of our previous vendors, one of the problems we had with a couple of these vendors that we're not using anymore was they went and picked up everything that you could pick up. And, so where it would be, rather than trying to research it just to see if it was actually a valid lien, you had Joe Smith. So they picked up everything that came up under Joe Smith's name. And it wasn't, when you have common names, you got to verify that information. But anyway, so a lot of times title companies will pick up things that were released and they missed the release. So, but in this case, really, you've got a title policy. So there really shouldn't be any concern there, because you could go back and file a title claim if they ever came back and said, no, this is still a valid lien.
Okay. On that title, this is a little bit of a strange story, because this note was not purchase money.
Right.
The property was purchased 25 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was purchased originally by the husband and wife, and then the note that I'm buying is only names the man, and
right.
I'm kind of assuming that, either there was a death or a divorce or something along those lines, but the titles policy specifically excludes any claims by the spouse. And that just kind of sends off a couple red flags. Is that anything to be concerned about?
No, because it could have been a divorce situation, and it could have been he refinanced it with Citi, and they refinanced it in his name.
Yes.
And the other deal is that old mortgage that was reflecting, and I believe it was for like $9,000, if I'm correct.
Right.
So that old mortgage matured. It was supposed to pay off in 2005.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's been 11 years ago. So you can rest assured that if that had not been released, they would have already foreclosed on that mortgage.
Well, and the lender on the original note was absorbed by Citi, who made the second note. So
right.
Kind of thing, I agree. It's likely that all of this is copacetic, but it just doesn't have that lien release, and it has this exclusion of the former spouse, any claims being covered by the title insurance. And I just don't know if that's usual or not to have that kind of exclusion.
Right. Well, again, the safekeeping on this deal is that you've got a title policy.
Okay. Except the title policy.
And that's
the title policy specifically excludes the claims of the spouse.
Okay. Okay. So, but that note, that mortgage, the $9,000 mortgage, was the husband and spouse.
Right.
Both parties. So
right.
Even though it excludes the spouse, it's still the husband. The husband is on that note.
Except
so,
if the former spouse had claims on the property, those are specifically excluded from the title policy coverage. And
right,
I don't know. That was a long time
ago.
And
if the spouse had claims on that property, there would be something filed a public record that would reflect on that title policy.
Okay.
Because they run a name search on everybody. So even that spouse, if there had been any claims filed, it would have been filed against that legal description, and that's what they pick up on. That's the first thing they do is they run the legal description, and the database gives them everything that's been filed against that legal description.
Yeah, I just never had to rely on a title policy as a lender, and I didn't know, you know, how secure I should feel with that.
Well, let me just say this. We bought the note, Fred, because we had the title policy. I mean, we didn't update our title, obviously, because we had that title policy to support that. So, and we knew if there was any claims by the wife or the spouse that something would have been filed a public record. She'd had to file it through claims. And the other thing was that old mortgage matured in 2005. So it's been it's an 11-year-old mortgage that's already matured. And like I say, they may wait a long time to foreclose, but they don't wait 11 years. Just don't happen.
Well, they might
just
have.
Don't happen.
This is the guy we're talking about.
Even in the worst of it, they don't wait 11 years. So they might wait 4 or 5 years, but they don't wait 11 years.
It was kind of an interesting conversation. I called City Financial, who's the successor to the original lender, and they actually said they did not have the payment history, and they would not do a release of lien unless the borrower approved that they paid off that note.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. For what it's worth.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Fran. Hope we answered your question.
Charles Mark had a follow-up question from earlier about insurance. He was saying the insurance he was asking about was business liability insurance for his business on top of the homeowner's insurance.
Oh, okay. Now then, I don't know about Ross. That's what he would need to talk to Ross, because it's actually on his business. And I'm sure they have a policy for that. And Mark, sorry, I misunderstood you. I'm sure they have a policy if you're talking about insuring your business because of the liability. I was not aware he's talking about a business, but I would still check with Ross and see what type of policies they have.
Cool.
That's going to fall more under the commercial insurance side.
Cool. Mr. Matt.
I think we got some announcements coming up, don't we?
Well, yes. Actually, first off, wanted to kind of just re-talk about the whole Tracy turnkey note buyer website that she has. And we've got a couple of other products that are going to be coming down the pipeline here in the next couple of months. But if you had not heard her talking on a webinar, probably I think about 2 months ago, maybe three. She has a turnkey note buyer website process. I think it's about $300 or $400, Charles.
It's less than four. It's like $350, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
It's definitely a very crucial key for getting out to note buyers, and so just in case you hadn't heard about that, you can email us and say, hey, I want more information about that, and we'll definitely get it back out to you. Or you can go to the member site. Her information is on the member site, and you can look at that webinar as well as call her or email her, and she'll set you up with the webinar or with the website processes. So, and we are
going to be actually updating her whole page, her whole vendor page, to kind of include all this stuff. So, for now, you know, her stuff is on there. It's in an archive on the Achievers Call, I think.
Yeah.
And you could check that out. But her whole vendor thing is going to be updated, so look for that this week, and we'll have links to where you can get the website, information about it, her website, stuff like that. So.
Yeah, and I know Mr. Speed had said he wanted to talk about the webinar, but we're going to kind of hold off on the other until it gets ready to go, and then we'll let everybody kind of see exactly what we're talking about as far as the other options that she has to offer. So, Charles, we've got what?
Well, here's the big announcement. We got 3 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, till Summer Summit. And so everything is turning. We're trying to get everything ready. We're trying to get all the headcount. So we need to make sure everybody gets registered. I know we say this every week, but we've got to. We are at some point here, pretty close up, going to do a registration deadline. So we've had quite a big turnout on our registration, but we've got to get an accurate headcount. I know that the host hotel, or where we're having it at the American Airlines Center, that hotel has filled up. We've got a couple other venues or hotels close by. Matt, do you have those by chance?
I am pulling those up right now, so yes.
So you want to go ahead and contact one of these hotels. Of course, all this information is on the member site. But you want to go ahead and make sure you've got your room reservation and your registration online for the Summer Summit. We've got a lot of great content. We've got some great speakers that are going to be there. It'll open up on Thursday. It'll open up Thursday, June 3rd, with the Dykes-Botiford class. So that's the entity structuring. And that's filling up quickly, too. So please, if you're going to come in on that Thursday, we'd love to have you at the Dykes-Botiford class on Thursday. And then Thursday evening, we're going to take a bus, and we're going to go to Fort Worth. And they're going to host a barbecue dinner in the Stockyards in Fort Worth. And, of course, keep in mind that all the proceeds from the Dykes-Botiford goes to the Child Welfare Board of Nakona. Is it Nakona?
Monte County.
In Nakona, Texas, but it's Monte County. So it's a Child Welfare Board. It's a great cause. It's we've supported them for a number of years, and it's actually a great cause. But they're going to have a great barbecue. They're going to have entertainment. So it'll be a great evening there. And then on Friday, we kick off Friday morning, June 3rd, with the Summer Summit, which is Friday and Saturday. Also, there will be a three-day class going on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So, you know, if you're staying over Sunday, feel free to join the class on Sunday. But we're looking forward to it. It's a great weekend. A lot of work's going into this, and so we look forward to seeing everybody.
Charles, you misspoke. It's actually not 3 weeks. It's a little bit over two. It's 17 days away. So even sooner than 3 weeks.
Okay. 2 weeks, everybody, and 3 days. Let me correct myself.
We're going to have somebody mess
June,
up.
It is June 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Well, it ends on the 4th, but we have a class on the 5th. So you're welcome to stay for the class. So thank you, Zarina, for that correction.
You're very welcome.
Everybody, just so you know, the Word doc that I just brought up is in your handouts, and those are options which have the links in there. But all rooms for the Summer Summit and the Dykes-Botiford class, everything sold out blockwise for us. So if you're going to come and you're kind of going to register a little later with us, these are your options as far as hotels that you'll be able to stay at while the event's going on. So just kind of, and that is in your handouts if you wanted to pull that up and reference this and for it. So
the nice thing
we
is
say this every
all
week
the hotels.
You somebody's going to register like 3 days.
Right, they will. But I mean these hotels, they all have shuttles, so that's the nice thing. They do have a shuttle that'll bring you over to the American Airlines Center, so you don't have to worry about driving. And they're all relatively close to the American Airlines training facility. So, again, we're excited. We're looking forward to seeing everybody. We're still putting the final touches on it, so we should be wrapping things up here in the next week or so. But definitely look forward to seeing everybody.
And everybody who is going to make it on the call tomorrow, we are going to have a special guest. So National Asset Advisors are going to be on tomorrow too. So if you can make the call, make sure to get there and they're going to come on and show a couple of assets there. So it's going to be a good call tomorrow too. So
it's going to be a good call because I'm going to be there.
Well, I was going to pull up with that.
Yeah, I think Eddie's going to be on next week. I think
he should be returning next week. Eddie's been on his trail ride, and I believe he's in California this week at an event. So. Mm-hmm. He's been on the road the last few weeks, so yes. Next week we're going to turn it back over to Eddie, and me and Zarina are going on vacation.
That's right. Peace out.
What else, Matt?
No, that's all we have for tonight. So we are all finished up. So
cool.
Well, everybody, we enjoyed it. We will talk to some of you tomorrow night, and everybody have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye, guys.
Good night, everybody.